Support comes from New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals standing with more than 600,000 workers in education, human services, and healthcare with the Our Voice, Our Values, Our Union campaign. And United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President. UUPinfo.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. Joining us this week, and are we lucky to have him, is New York State Comptroller Tom DiNapoli, my friend. Welcome back, Tom.
Thank you, Alan. Good to be back with you as we head towards the end of summer.
Yeah, it's the dog days of summer. That's what happens, you know, as we head towards summer. And then comes the winter. Then comes the summer. Then comes the winter.
And we got to get through it. We got to get through an election in between all that. So,
Oh, yeah. Okay. So let's talk about COVID-19 and the new law that will help local governments weather the coronavirus pandemic. Now, you are the guy who introduced that law, right? I mean, you're not a legislator anymore, but you suggested it. Am I right?
Yeah. So, local governments are really facing a financial crunch. I mean, we talk a lot about what's happening at the state level, but at the local government as well, they've, many of them at county level depend on sales tax. We know that that's way off. I think we're going to enter a phase where some people are going to have a problem paying their property taxes. And state aid, which is basically held flat in the budget, and now, of course, we see some of the local aid payments are being withheld, at least temporarily, maybe even longer. So they're really facing a crunch. So we worked with the local government association, Association of Towns, Association of Counties, NICOM, and so on, school boards, and said, what can we do perhaps to help you? So we looked at past efforts after Superstorm Sandy, for example, where they were given more flexibility in terms of accessing reserve funds that would be traditionally dedicated for specific purposes to allow them to access those funds to help them balance their budgets, to allow a longer payback period on some of their borrowing. So there's precedent for this kind of flexibility, but that's really the word. It gives local governments, and by that I mean our municipalities and our school districts, flexibility to manage their affairs through this very, very tough time. So we put it together, the legislature passed it, and we're very happy that Governor Cuomo signed it, and really credit to the local government associations. And it's will it solve their problems? No, but it will make navigating through a very problematic time a lot easier for them.
Okay. I wanted to go on to the federal money. Now, Andrew Cuomo said from day one, we have to have that federal money. We cannot do without that federal money. But if we don't get the federal money, I would say to him, then what do we do? And he would say, we have to get the federal money. There's no two ways about it. But somebody's got to be planning in case we don't get the federal money, and there's a lot of it, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, Alan, you're asking the right question. The problem is, at this point, there really isn't a plan B. And I think the consequences of not getting additional federal help are all very dire. I mean, look, when you have a shortfall, as you know, in the updated financial plan, the gap for this year has grown to $14.5 billion. You know, what are your options? You cut programs, right? You raise taxes. You do more borrowing. None of those are great options in terms of cutting programs. So much of the state money goes to cities, counties, towns, villages, school districts that already are in tough shape. You're going to transfer our shortfall to their level where they have even less of an ability to respond. And you're going to be cutting, in some cases, essential services at a time that we're dealing with a pandemic, trying to get the economy moving again. Borrowing, we already borrow an awful lot in New York, and we've given, at the state level, the governor enhanced stability beyond what would normally be authorized to borrow, and he's exercised some of that, but there's a limit to that. And then the third option of raising revenue, which usually means raising taxes. You could make that debate, and I think there are many tax equity issues that we haven't dealt with in New York for a long time. But in the middle of this crisis, I don't know that we're going to come up with a thoughtful tax policy, especially at a time where, even for some folks on the upper end, they have a mobility now, and the governor's pointed this out, that makes that a lot more problematic an issue. And in an election year, will the legislature come back and raise taxes? I'm not so sure. So, Alan, there is no clear plan B. What it means is if Washington doesn't come through, we're going to have to double, triple sharpen those pencils. And I think the first line of plan B is going to be significant budget cuts. That, again, is only going to make a very bad situation worse. will disproportionately fall on working families and disadvantaged communities, will make it even harder for us to bounce back. And the biggest fear, make it harder for us to deal with this pandemic. It's not over yet. What will happen in the fall if we do get a recurrence? Until there's a vaccine, the first priority has to be the public health imperative. And that means we need money for the county health departments, for the state health department. Alan, we need that federal help. They need to redouble their efforts. You know, it should have happened in June. It should have happened in July. It damn well better happen in September, because if not, we're really in bad shape.
Well, you and I both.
And by the way, it's not just New York. Let's emphasize that. This is not a red state or blue state issue. You see these other states now with the high infection rate? They're having the same. Kentucky, you know, their budget shortfall is significant. They need help as well.
Tom DiNapoli, we know, you and I, that the governor really has no choice but to say there is no other way to go except for the federal government to make up that loss. Nevertheless, the question I'm asking, and you're the controller, you're closer to this by far than I am, does Cuomo really have a secret plan as to what he's going to do? Have you talked about it with him? Do you have any sense of that at all?
I don't. I mean, you're reminding me of Nixon's secret plan to settle the war. Remember that?
Right, sure.
I'm not aware that there's a secret plan. But look, let me say this. And you know, Alan, we call it straight sometimes, and some people don't like when we do that. I believe the Governor and Division of Budget have been managing the cash flow during this very difficult time very well. Now, that's meant that they've been very careful on spending. That's meant they've had to hold back some spending that had been expected for our local governments and our nonprofits and others that depend on state money. It's creating problems. But what the governor could do, remember, under the budget, and we've talked about this before, he's been given extraordinary authority to basically unilaterally, you know, through the Division of Budget, cut the state budget. He has said, we're going to delay those payments. We're not saying that they're cuts because we're hoping to avoid the cuts. And I think that's a responsible approach. But, you know, we have to assume that at some level, and maybe it's a hopeful assumption, that we will get more help from Washington. The real question is the timing. When? Because if this drags on, the later in the budget year, the harder it is for a cut to have the impact, you know, in terms of the cost savings that you'd like it to have. And if it falls way short of, you know, that total $500 billion that the National Governors Association asked for, you know, we are going to have to come up with a plan B. And I'm sure there are folks in the Division of Budget, this is what they do, are looking at what some of those options are in terms of longer-term cuts. But we should not be at the point of getting there, because the federal government, it's a national issue. Look, the states need to have the economic damage created by COVID-19. Again, it's not because of any state misspending. We're not asking for a bailout for the pension fund. It drives me crazy when I hear some folks on the other side say that. We're not asking for that. We want to plug the holes that are a consequence of the COVID-19 pandemic, the economy being put on hold. Why? Because if the state budget hole isn't plugged, it gets passed on to local governments. Why? Because if the state can't have adequate resources to deal with the public health crisis, to support the economic recovery, we're not going to get out of this for years. So it is in the national interest, not just for New York, but for all states. And look, the federal government has done this before. They've helped already. Let's point that out with some of the reimbursement for the COVID-19 expenses. After the Great Recession, federal aid to local governments 10 years ago went up like 60%. So there's precedent for this federal help. And Washington is the only place that has the resources and the printing press to create the money to get us through this tough time.
Well, that's all true, except that we have a different president than we've ever had before. And this guy is, what's the correct political science term? A nut job when it comes to doing what's right or what's rational. It's always political in terms of what's good for him.
Well, so, but that may yeah. work to our favor, because, look, he's running, and, you know, whatever the polls say, I think it's going to be a competitive election. And yep. Now that you see the red states getting hit, I mean, look, you know, New York, with all our troubles at the beginning of this, I mean, the infection rate, the positivity, the hospitalizations way down. We're really a model now, and credit to the governor for you know, handling that well. But these red states now, they're not controlling it, so many of them, and they're having now to go backward on their economy. They were open too fast, and now they're closing. They're having the same budget shortfalls. He needs those states to be made whole as well. So that actually politically may work to our advantage. Maybe they've been holding off because they want it to be closer to the election. Whatever the politics are, you know, we need the money. I just hope they do it sooner than later.
Okay, let's talk a little bit about Wall Street. A lot of people confuse what's happening on Wall Street with the economy. And what's happening on Wall Street, for those people who have 401ks and who have money invested in the market, and that's not a huge proportion of Americans, it's good. So is that a good economy?
You know, and obviously you didn't mention the piece, but obviously pension funds too, right, are invested
Sure.
in terms of Wall Street. And we had a loss at the end of the fiscal year on March 31st, and now we've bounced back and made back those losses and then some as of our numbers as of the end of June. I mean, this is the problem that you're pointing out. There really is a disconnect, and it's alarming, and it's upsetting between what happens on Wall Street and what's happening on Main Street. You know, so Wall Street is looking, you know, you look at the index, you know, you look at S&P and Dow and so on. I mean, these are the big companies we're all familiar with, and multinational corporations and so on. That's not the mom and pop, you know, restaurant, hardware store, small bit, the independent entrepreneur. They're not reflected in those markets. So what you see is that the big folks are able to weather this tough time, and in some cases really do exceedingly well. But what's not measured is the misery on Main Street. And at the end of the day, because so much of our economy is consumer driven, if all these folks who are unemployed don't have spending money, if all these small businesses that have been closed are not going to open up again. Alan, I haven't been in New York City too much. We've been mostly here in Albany, but I was in the city last week for a couple of days. Downtown Manhattan, where our office is, not only are so many of the small businesses closed, they have for lease signs. They're not coming back. You know, so we really have to recognize that we cannot measure this economy by what's happening on Wall Street. It is benefiting, you know, yes, a limited number, but again, because of, again, I have the perspective of the pension fund, so I'm pleased for all of our public workers that our investments are doing better. But in terms of the everyday person on Main Street, this economy is not working. Alan, we've paid out, I'll end on this, over $40 billion thus far this year, $40 billion in unemployment benefits in New York. For all of last year, we paid out only about $2 billion. The devastation and the number of people that not only aren't working but don't have any sense of a quick turnaround, it's an unbelievable situation because there seems to be no end in sight right now.
Controller Tom DiNapoli, where does that money come from that we've been paying out?
Well, keep in mind, unemployment is set up, you know, like in a sense, like an insurance. So it's federal, and employers pay in, and you know, so it's not really a, you know, a state expense in that sense. And obviously, you know, you've seen enhanced benefits coming, you know, out of Washington. But you know, at some point, you know, they have to underwrite all. It's not just New York, right? The same thing is happening in other states. So you're going to see a shortfall there that's going to have to be made up. But I think the key thing is that, you know, people want to go to work. And then, you know, you add the complication. Even if people want to go to work, let's say they have a job. We're going through this at our agency right now. You know, school is about to start. You know, parents are having a tough time. You know, every school district seems to have a different plan. Parents having to make tough choices about, you know, do they keep the kids at home for virtual learning? You know, what if they're in a district where school is open 5 days, 3 days? Do they feel safe sending the kids? And that's creating an issue. We're trying to work with our employees to accommodate them. You know, child care issues, school issues, elder care. That's another impediment to getting this economy back to where we want it to be and for people to be back to work.
Now, New York is going to want to vote many people by absentee ballot. Are we prepared, Mr. Controller, with the audit function? Are we prepared to let that happen?
Well, we better be. You know, we haven't done an audit on the Board of Elections this year, but we've done in the past, and certainly have found a lot of issues. And you saw, particularly downstate in the primaries, a lot of complication with the timeliness of the ballots coming in, the length of time to count. Now, you know, the legislature just did some changes in the election law to hopefully make that process work more easily. But I think if the primary was any indication, you're going to see an unprecedented number of people voting either by absentee ballot or early voting. And I think we have to be concerned that in the past, boards of elections locally have been overwhelmed when you've had an increase of turnout. The warning signs are there, and I know folks are working hard to make sure that they do it right. But you know, look, the president is already signaling that you know, he may not trust the results of this election. And look at all the the other states that they're going to mail all these ballots out, and they're going to go I forgot the phrase he used, but go fishing for votes or whatever. He's already setting it up that inefficiencies in the balloting are going to be a pretext for him to say the election was rigged and it was fixed. Because, Alan, the one thing I can bet you on, and I suspect you would agree, he's not going to win the popular vote. The question is whether or not he can still win the electoral vote. And that's where you're going to get to that question of whether the elections are fair. And boy, talk about taking a page out of bad political leaders around the globe through history. Calling the election illegitimate, that's the first step towards undermining the entire system. And he's already setting that up. So let's make sure that in New York, we're not going to have those questions.
We looked at Carolyn Maloney, my old friend.
Yeah.
You know, there was a huge to-do because the ballots couldn't get counted on time.
It took like 6 weeks. You know, the president kept mentioning her race. I think he probably lived in her district when he was a New Yorker. First of all, she's terrific and has great resilience. But that was going to be a contested race anyway, because the same fellow ran against her 2 years ago when there was a lot of contention. No, look, the one thing we don't do real-time auditing of election ballots. I mean, that's not really what our role is. But it's been very clear, particularly in New York City, there's a lot of emphasis on the Board of Elections procedures. I mean, look, New York City Board of Elections, God love them, but they've had issues that predate, 2020. Everybody's working double time to figure it out, but you know what? We'll certainly play whatever role we can, but we don't have auditors that are going to be sitting there in the polling places. That's not our function or our role. So I can't personally assure you that it's going to work, but I know everybody is focused on not repeating the problems that happened with the primary.
Let me ask you something, Tom DiNapoli. A recent audit that you've done of the economic development projects in New York State. And this is where some of Andrew Cuomo's friends and associates got themselves into a tremendous amount of trouble. And you did an audit, and it was a fairly critical audit. Could you tell us what you found?
Well, we've done a number of audits on economic development projects over the years, and the administration of Empire State Development, which is the economic development agency for the state. And this audit involved looking at high-tech projects, particularly focused on upstate and the Buffalo Billion included in that. And we found that the kind of oversight that should have been there just wasn't there. The kinds of questions to be asked at the front end. And we looked at about, over $2 billion worth of projects. You know, what's the financial viability of the project? What's the expected return in terms of jobs to be created? What's the financial viability of the private companies that are getting assistance? We found that those kinds of, I think, logical questions, I don't think they're hard questions, really, by and large, weren't being asked. And the result was that many of these projects have fallen short of what had been their stated goals. The goals become a moving target if the company seems to be not missing the deadline. The goal then changes and, becomes a lower goal kind of to fit, the reality on the ground. And the kind of public reporting to ensure transparency and accountability has been lacking, certainly has been inconsistent. So I think it really raises the question, what kind of return are taxpayers getting on the investment? And I think it kind of mirrors what we've been saying with some of our other economic development audits. We do a really good job at the front end of announcing things. We don't do such a good job of monitoring as the money's being spent. And then at the end of what's expected to be, the project, are we really measuring and then reporting on what, in fact, the payback was? And now, not all programs are like this, but in terms of these high-tech ones we looked at, certainly the IDAs, the Industrial Development Agencies, we found similar problems. So I'm hoping that this will be a teachable moment, as we certainly hope all our audits are. But, in terms of Empire State Development, traditionally, their attitude has tended to be that, everything's fine and we've already taken care of everything. I think they really need to take a hard look about how they analyze the value and the return we're getting on these investments.
So just to be clear, Tom DiNapoli, and that is that this Economic Development Corporation basically supports businesses, big businesses sometimes, with state funds. And the question is, are we getting our money back from that,
yep,
right?
Yep. And look, we all know, especially for many of the upstate regions, you're creating jobs and trying to grow the tech sector, a very worthy and very important goal. But you know, just throwing money and not following how that money's being spent and making sure it's being spent appropriately. And as you point out, some of these projects, you know, going back a couple of years, you had some people taking care of themselves as part of this process. So
they were close to the governor. Those were people.
Whoever they were close to, they
were
doing.
What do you mean, well? You know who they were. You know who they were. Let me ask you a question. Have you heard Tom DiNapoli from the governor since this audit came out? I mean, I know that the agency itself has responded to you, you know, but did the governor pick up the phone and say, hey, Tom, what are you doing here?
Alan, I would never disclose my personal conversations to you. Come on now.
I take that as a yes.
Don't read anything into it.
Okay. So is there a way to fix this?
Yeah.
How do you fix it?
Yeah, I mean, look, the way to fix it is to take a look at our recommendations and to say, instead of just being defensive, can in fact we improve our operations? Can we do better? And that's the part I think that often has been lacking as far as Empire State Development. And you got some new folks there. I'm hoping that they'll embrace this with a different spirit. You know, you could argue, and some people do philosophically, whether the state should be in the business of trying to incentivize private companies to create jobs. That's a separate philosophical discussion. But my position would be, if we are going to do that, and then we're going to do it to the tune of billions of dollars, with grand pronouncements of great return, we have to be honest then in terms of monitoring. Well, first of all, assessing at the front end whether, in fact, these are smart choices and not just a good press release, and then monitoring the progress. And if the progress isn't being met, you know, stop the funding. So, you know, we talked earlier about the shortfalls that we're facing. You know, if we should not be giving away money for projects that aren't producing. That's a place to save some money. And that means maybe admitting that sometimes, you know what, even if the assessments at the front end made sense, if it's not working, if it turned out the company wasn't viable, if other things happened that created the problem, then just say we got to change course and save the money, put it somewhere else. And I think that's a different spirit than we've seen embraced by the agency in the past. But that's how I would do it if I was running it.
Very sadly, a guy we both know and that I've known over the years and interviewed many, many times, Sheldon Silver, the former speaker, very powerful fellow, is on his way to jail. He's 76 years old, and it's a 6.5-year sentence. I assume he won't have to do 6.5 years, but that's a lot of time. So is corruption endemic to politics? You watch it all the time. And why would lawmakers pass reform, to think about this, which might catch themselves? In other words, you pass reforms, but a lot of people aren't going to be happy about doing it. Am I wrong?
You know, for all the years I've served in government, it's always amazed me how many people from, you know, and I'm talking about elected officials, you know, who, for a few thousand or sometimes for hundreds of thousands of dollars will compromise their position. Look, you know, public service is not going to make you rich. And I think people who try to monetize the position, if I could use that phrase, invariably are going to get jammed up, and in the worst case, end up in jail. Does it have to be part of the process in the system? No, but unfortunately, it seems to be. That's why, you know, in terms of legislators, you know, I think there should be a limit on outside income. Maybe not banning it totally, but certainly similar to Congress, have a very strict limit because even if you have disclosure forms and even if you have rules, if you're just going to figure out ways to go around all those rules, you're going to trip yourself up. Is it worth it in the long run? I don't think it is. If you're in your 70s and going to prison, is that the way to end life? And you know, in terms of the speaker, you know, he did some very important things during his tenure. You know, and I was there and saw him fighting for schools. And you know, people forget there was a time where you know, he was the Democratic Party. You know, the Senate was Republican. Pataki was the governor, and Shelley had to hold up the Democratic standard, and he did that with tremendous force. That's going to be forgotten, right? And I think that's what he said at the sentencing. You know, whatever good he's done, he'll be remembered for this final chapter. And that is sad. I talked about teachable moment with an audit. Let this be a teachable moment as well. If you think you're going to get away with it, you're not, because at some point you're going to get snagged, and people should just have their inner voice tell them, if I'm an elected official, my salary is what my salary is, and if I think I'm going to make a whole lot more money through some other mechanisms, then get out of public office. If you want to go make money, that's fine, but you're not going to make money and enrich yourself while you're in public office.
I want to ask you a question. We've been talking about this, you and I, over the months and years that we've been doing this. There was a point at which I was quite unhappy because I thought that some of your auditing powers had been taken away, not only by the governor, but by the legislature. The mud hit the fan, and a lot of people were very annoyed by this, and there was a reconciliation of sorts, I think. Did you get all your powers back?
Well, we didn't get all of them back, but the good news is we got much of it back. And I have to say that agreement has been implemented. However, the footnote to it is that in the midst of COVID-19, certain kinds of contracts deemed emergency related to the COVID response, we were cut out of that again. Now, we didn't necessarily raise a big stink about that because, you know, again, back in the thick of this, when we needed ventilators and masks and gloves and we couldn't find them, you know, in the interest of efficiency, that's why that authority was suspended.
That's the pre-audit, right? That's what we call the pre-audit.
Right. But this is related to COVID. So we did have much of that authority restored for non-COVID, and that agreement is working. So in terms of COVID, so we still did payments. So we worked with, you know, the governor's office on scrutinizing some of those payments. But look, we you saw the stories at the beginning of this.
Yeah.
You know, there were some questionable folks involved with, you know, claiming they were going to get us ventilators or whatever. And at the end of the day, you know, we had to, you know, New York had to pull back on some of that. So Alan, yes, by and large, our authority is back. However, under the emergency related to COVID, there are some areas where, in fact, we were carved out again. That is tied to the COVID emergency.
We're out of time. I'm sorry about that. Our guest has been New York State Comptroller Tom DiNapoli, my friend, if I may say so. Comptroller, thanks for showing up.
Thank you, my friend.